Welcome to episode 233 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live on June 4th, 2021. This is a show about Microsoft 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. This week, it's Jason as we talk about Azure Resource Manager template specs, the new Azure Firewall connector for Logic apps, and some changes coming to how you manage Azure AD with PowerShell. So, Jason, you're up. I suppose I should talk about this because I bought the M1, and we have talked about M1s in the past. So if anybody cares about M1s, I have sadly had to move back to my laptop. I'm back on my Intel laptop for my daily driver. Nothing against the M1 as a processor or the ARM or frankly, any of the applications I need to run. They all worked fine. If I could, I would still be on the M1. I actually ran into a memory issue. It worked great for like the last couple months, and call it a bad habit or just a desire to try out new stuff or just slowly realizing, oh, I need to install this app or I want to use this app. I ran into memory issues. So my M1 now is at the point where with everything I have installed on it and everything I use, if I reboot it and boot up all my normal stuff, Outlook, Teams, Edge, Obsidian that I use for notes, Fantastical for my calendars, a couple other of those things that really I need to do my daily work, I'm left with about 1 gig, maybe 2 gigs of physical memory left. So, and I start like getting the yellow of, hey, you're starting to get memory issues. By the time I like fire up another browser instance to do client work or open up like Visual Studio Code to do stuff, I frankly just run out of memory. And I was starting to hit the swap file and like multiple times a day was starting to get out of memory warnings. So for me, 16 gigs of memory was just not quite enough to do what I needed to on a daily basis.
Yeah, it happens. Hopefully some new ones come out next week.
Yes, that's what I'm hoping for. So as soon as I can get one with more memory, I will not be buying another one as long as the 16 gig memory limit is still there. If I can get up to 32, I think I will go ahead and get another M1, assuming it's not crazy expensive. Because overall, I liked it. I liked having a laptop and a desktop. And just having everything sitting here and working, not always unplugging and replugging and redocking and all of that. But I just need more memory.
Well, hopefully someday you get all the things that you want. But until that day, you're going to have to keep suffering like the rest of us mere mortals.
Yes. And working with... I still don't have a segue. I'll let you come up with a segue today into cloudy topics.
into cloudy topics. You want to start with template specs?
I didn't even send you that article.
You like ARM templates? Or?
I don't know what template specs are. What are ARM template specs? I know they're
You know what template specs are.
Template specs. Did we talk about this before?
No, I don't think we've talked about template specs. We've talked about ARM templates.
See, I know what templates are.
And kind of how to store them and version them and maybe think about that. So if you've ever gone into the Azure portal and you've searched for like just resource types in the marketplace or things like that,
yep.
There's a resource blade that's called templates. So you've had this capability to upload your ARM templates into Azure and then share them out through standard IAM controls like RBAC, maybe to others in your organization, right. Things like that. So they're stored in a resource group. You can do RBAC against them. But then when you wanted to deploy them, the deployment story was kind of a little bit murky there because, you know, potentially if you wanted to deploy straight from the Azure portal, not too bad. Like go in, find your template in the templates blade or the resource group it lived in. Click the deploy button and you're off to the races. But what if you were trying to run that template from maybe like PowerShell or the CLI or invoke it via REST API, something like that? Could be a little bit more problematic. Like you'd have to know the template existed, go find it, download it, maybe make your conversions locally, anything you wanted to change, maybe create a parameter file for it, blah, 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 and then go ahead and run it. So if you've been using the older template gallery. I don't even know I think that's what it was called, was the template gallery. There's actually a conversion process that you can go to and convert from the template gallery over to template specs. So template specs share a lot of similar attributes to the old templates that were stored in the template gallery. Specifically, you can upload your ARM templates, you can apply RBAC to them to go ahead and share them out, and that's all good. Now, the cool thing is they actually live in their own resource type. So it's a strong ARM type. Effectively, it's got a resource provider behind it. So Microsoft.resources/template-specs. And that resource type allows you to have a main template or any number of linked templates that are associated by relative path with that main template as well. So you're still uploading your templates to resource groups, but now they get this nice template specs resource type along with them. Like I said, you pick up the RBAC. You also pick up support for versioning within your spec as well. The next question is probably like, what's different between a spec and ARM template? And from an authoring perspective, not a whole lot. So ultimately, a template spec is actually just a standard ARM template. You might be using other attributes or properties as part of the kind of resource section of your ARM JSON file when you're going ahead and putting things together along the way. So now you get this really cool capability to not only create kind of one source of truth for a template. So you get this canonical template. It can be shared within your organization, and then it can be linked to one or more templates that are also kind of their canonical versions and also managed through the same versioning construct and sharing construct along the way. So now, like, this potentially overcomes a couple things, like depending on how you manage your ARM templates today within your organization. Like, say you manage your templates within GitHub, but then you wanted people to be able to deploy that template directly by calling the URI from the command line. That ultimately meant that that resource had to be public. That doesn't have to happen anymore. So now with a template spec, when you want to deploy it, rather than pointing it to a template URL, say with PowerShell, there's a new parameter on things like the CLI and PowerShell. So you do like new AZ resource group deployment and dash template spec ID. And then the ID is the actual resource ID of the spec that you want to deploy. So, you know, the resource ID being like the proper /subscription/your subscription GUID/resource groups, you know, template spec, you know, or resource group or whatever resource group the spec lives in, and actually pointing down to the provider level. So everything can stay private and constrained to the existing RBAC constructs that you kind of, and organizational policies that you maybe deploy around IAM today, which is ultimately like a pretty cool kind of thing. It overcomes some of the limitations, like I said, that were there in the original template gallery, and it does give you additional functionality over the top to kind of help you out along the way.
Got it. I think I got all that. I definitely need to go play with these ARM templates some more, and these template specs some more.
The thing about them is the template spec is the resource type, but ultimately, like, it's the thing that you're uploading as a template spec, it is just an ARM template. Yep. So you could take existing ARM templates or things that you have out there today and move them over to specs, like, dead easy, right? Just go ahead and upload anything. The thing and you're all set to go. What you might want to change is like the way you link or call out to link templates or things like that, like kind of like sub-resource or resource dependencies.
Yeah. Like, this is one of those where, like, I get the whole ARM templates and conceptually I think it makes sense. This is one of those, like, I'm going to have to get my hands on to, I think, fully grasp it.
Yeah. So I think it's helpful to do that. The other one that's potentially a good thing to go take a look at in ARMland, like if you haven't had a chance to do it yet, would be Bicep, which has recently gone out to version 0.4, I believe, is kicking out and about right there now.
Yeah, I need to play with that. We need to go rope somebody in. We've talked about getting some people on to talk about Bicep, and we just have not made that happen yet. So we should do an episode on Bicep.
Yeah, agreed.
So, Scott, do you know how many files are shared outside your organization? Or are you sure that every team in your Microsoft 365 tenant has a valid owner? Guess what? ShareGate's got your back. After helping thousands of customers move to Office 365, they've learned that success in the cloud involves more than just migration. That's why they created ShareGate Apricot, an automated governance platform for Microsoft Teams and Microsoft 365 groups. ShareGate Apricot can help you answer questions like these without planning unnecessary restrictions on your users. With ShareGate Apricot, you get full visibility across each team's lifecycle from creation all the way through to archival. You can automate manual tasks involved in identifying problem areas like inactive or orphan teams. And you can collaborate with team owners on corrective measures to keep your teams tidy and secure. That's also why they've combined ShareGate Desktop, their trusted migration and content management tool, with ShareGate Apricot in a single subscription so that you have everything you need to be successful in the Microsoft cloud.
Since we started off in Azure land, should we stay in Azure land with some news?
Sure.
So this was one that I saw out there around... Yes, I want to go to that link. I clicked on it. Of course I want to visit it. Why would I not? Automated detection and responses for Azure Firewall with the new Logic App Connector and Playbooks. So this is some updates. So it sounds like before, and you could go in, you could create Logic App Connectors for Azure Firewalls and Playbooks. Now you can do a custom Logic App Connector, and there's some new playbook templates for Azure Firewall. So you can go tie this into Azure Firewall, into Azure Sentinel, to take various actions within Azure based on certain detections that maybe your Azure Firewall has. So it's kind of, and this is a fairly lengthy article and I'm still digesting all of this one as well, but you have a new Azure Sentinel incident that gets created and it essentially goes and triggers a Logic App. So you can go set up various actions, various customizations, various things you want to do based on threat detections and your Azure Firewall.
Like really the new thing is you can automate incident response based on incidents that contain IPs. So if you think about like wanting to trigger something off, do like a near real-time detection in Sentinel and then trigger a Logic App slash playbook. I kind of hate how they have the duality of terms right there. But yeah, be able to trigger that group of automation. And to be fair, you could have done this before, but you would have had to do everything through the native REST APIs to go ahead and like the Azure Resource Manager APIs for Azure Firewall to be able to go ahead and make those actions. So now that they're out there in a custom connector, you kind of have this easy way to maybe go ahead and action within your environment. So you have a threat response from an actor where you see a number of hits from the same IP coming in. It's not anything in your known network and you would just like to add that as a new firewall rule. Well, now you can go call that connector and there's a component within that connector to just go ahead and add a new rule. And you would be able to effectively take that IP that you've ingested from the incident and then go ahead and spit it out the other side and, you know, go ahead and create that firewall rule and just kind of have it all automatically updated for you along the way. You can do all sorts of other things too. So you can do things like maybe retrieve a current set of policy information, like send it out to somebody just so they can review it. You can do things like maybe you don't have a firewall created today. You can actually spin up a firewall on demand with this. So there's a component within that connector that lets you just go ahead and create that firewall. It doesn't have to be individual rules or individual IPs that you're setting. Like if you have IP groups within your firewall, you can go ahead and create or update those IP groups as well along the way. So it's just nice to kind of have the integration there and ready to go.
Right. Like one of the examples too they have in here is
when this alert is triggered or when this incident occurs, like go in and even post an adaptive notification action to a Teams channel. So you have your SOC team channel where all this stuff goes in, post an adaptive card and actually let people take action on that alert right within that Teams channel where all these messages, these adaptive cards are getting posted. So because it kind of gets you into Logic Apps now, there's just a plethora of various things you can do when those incidents fire or are triggered.
Yep. So you do have to deploy the connector. Like I would just call that out. There's a GitHub repo out there where you can go and fire all that up and kind of get it wired up. Authentication with it, super easy. It's just a service principle from the Logic app over to your subscription or to your firewall, like or firewalls, right? Depending on kind of how you're managing that and what all that looks like. Like I could see like a ton of upfront value in being able to manage IPs, IP groups, and also the ability to update tags within your firewalls as well. So if you see like, oops, maybe you blocked the wrong thing and there's a lot of blocks in there, like go ahead and unblock or block as needed along the way.
Yep. And there's a few different, so it talks about those three playbooks too. So there are those three different playbooks that are out there that allow you to do things like block IP addresses or respond to the Sentinel incident. And there's one that adds a new network rule. And they do have like a table out there about which of these different playbooks work with premium policy, standard policy, classic rules in your Azure firewall. So there are some dependencies there too on which of these playbooks work with which of these different policy types for your Azure firewall.
Licensing is always going to strike you.
Yes, there's always licensing. So that was another interesting one. Again, another one of those that, man, I just need more time, Scott. I want to go play with all these and try to figure out how all these different things work and link them together.
Out of the two we've talked about so far, they're both pretty easy to get hands on.
They are, aside from licensing.
Well, you know, the cloud's free. That's what I heard.
Is it? Well, in that case, can I have your credit card number for my new free subscription?
It's not free on my credit card.
I had...
It's free on Sacha's.
Oh. Well, do you have his credit card that you can share with me then?
I do not.
Oh, well.
I don't even know where my corporate card is. Like, it's going to be horrible. The first time I need to leave the house and go someplace, like, I have my cat card here next to me, so I'm all good because that's just plugged into my computer all the time, right? Like, I don't really need to remove it for anything. I don't know where my blue badge is. Yeah, I'd be darned if I know where my corporate card is. Like, it's all lost.
It's somewhere. So should we try to bridge the gap now from Azure into Microsoft 365? Oh, we got two new announcements here we could kind of bridge the gap with between Azure land and Microsoft 365 land.
Sure. You can have your cake and eat it too.
I can. Do you want to talk about Azure AD and PowerShell? Or would you like to talk about streaming APIs, Microsoft 365 Defender, and Azure Storage?
Let's start with the Azure AD and the graph thing.
The graph thing?
Because that's starting to get interesting out there.
Yeah, this was really interesting. Outlook add-ins are a great way to improve productivity and save time in the workplace, and Sperry Software has all the add-ins you'll ever need. The Save as PDF add-in is a bestseller and is great for project backups, legal discovery, and more. This add-in saves the email and attachments as PDF files. It's easy to download, easy to install, and Sperry Software's unparalleled customer service is always ready to help. Download a free trial at sperrysoftware.com, SperrySoftware.com, and see for yourself how great Save as PDF is. Listeners can get 20% off their order today by entering the code CLOUDIT. That's CLOUDIT, CLOUDIT, all one word at checkout. Sperry Software, work in email, not on email. So this was a blog post that got published. I don't even know what the date is today. Was this yesterday? Is it the third today?
Today's the fourth, you're doing just excellent at dates. So 2 days ago.
It's 2 days ago. Alex Simmons. So Alex Simmons is Corporate VP Program Management of Microsoft Identity, published this blog post saying that if you're using the Azure AD PowerShell, so Azure AD module for PowerShell, or the MS Online, MSOL PowerShell modules to manage Azure AD, We, being the identity team, is encouraging you to try the Microsoft Graph PowerShell SDK, and not only encouraging you to try it, but the very next sentence says the Microsoft Graph PowerShell SDK is where all our current and future investments are being made. And then there's a guest post down below from someone else on his team kind of talking through this roadmap. But the gist of this article is that they want to effectively work towards getting rid of the Azure AD PowerShell module and getting rid of the Microsoft Online PowerShell module. And all of that PowerShell scripting that you're going to be doing is going to be done with the Microsoft Graph PowerShell SDK.
Yes. Now, there are some differences between those things.
Right.
You need to kind of think about maybe the way you manage things today in Azure AD with PowerShell, if you do happen to go that path, and then what is exposed via the graph, or I would think more specifically, what is not exposed via the graph, so that you can potentially go and make your voice heard to say, like, hey, here are the gaps that need to be filled to make us successful. And it's not just like the Azure AD PowerShell modules. It's also things like MSOL. So the old Microsoft Services Online PowerShell modules, like there are still customers that use those because they have functionality that is only available within those modules.
Right.
And it's not just about like updates to them or things like that. Like they're also not going to be supported in like forward versions of PowerShell. So like Azure AD and MSOL, like no support in PowerShell 7. That's just going to be like out the door and not a thing that is going to be a supported scenario at all. So depending on like where you are today in both your PowerShell journey plus your Azure AD journey plus your MSOL journey, that's a bit of a like weird situation.
The whole thing about this is a little odd too. So they go on and talk about how last year they ended the support plans for Azure Active Directory Graph API in favor of the Microsoft Graph. And now they're rolling this all into the Microsoft Graph. But the Microsoft Graph is primarily Microsoft 365. Like Microsoft Graph offers that single endpoint for your access to Microsoft 365 data. But Azure AD is not specifically Microsoft 365. So you have a bunch of potential Azure AD admins that are used to just working with the Azure AD PowerShell. And now you're going to ask them to use a endpoint that's used for all Microsoft 365 stuff just to do their Azure AD stuff, even though maybe they aren't even using Microsoft 365. Because let's face it, those people very much exist.
I like just that this is going to be a super confusing time with even how you think about maybe like connecting, like you said, to the graph versus just Azure AD. Because if I connect to the graph, like the way it is today with the connect MS graph or MG graph, like whatever it is, right, that PowerShell commandlet, you can actually do things like specify the scopes that you want to connect with from the Microsoft Graph PowerShell module. So you do like connect MG graph dash scopes, and you would say like, hey, I want group.readwrite.all. So you're going to have to know potentially like the scopes that you want to connect to and make sure that you give those permissions just on at the time you connect, so that you have the right kind of, well, you have the right set of rights within the system along the way. If you have PowerShell modules that interact with your tenancy for user group management, anything like that, you're absolutely going to have to go out and update all of your scripts. So for some organizations, that might be like 5 scripts, might be 10 scripts. I know I've worked places where that could potentially be like upwards of a couple hundred scripts that all need to be touched to get you to where you need to be. And it's not just things like swapping out commandlet names in this case. It's, you know, going back and verifying like, hey, does it have the functionality I need? You can't rely potentially on like the way the graph is documented, like to say just off the cuff that like the way I did something with, you know, like new AD user on this side is going to work the same with the graph PowerShell commandlet. Like it might actually work a little bit differently for how you do things like create and update users and groups along the way, or service principles, like anything else, like whatever it happens to be. So it's kind of, I don't know, disappointing. Like change is change, right? It comes along, but it is something that is going to be contentious that there's no support after June 30, 2022. We're like a year out from there. And like, I know some organizations that would probably have trouble, like if I gave them 3 years notice to actually get all their like PowerShell scripts updated.
And I remember going through this because I used to use all the MSOL. Like I've already gone through this a few times, because at first you had MSOL and then you had Azure AD, like get Azure AD user. And then you had get dash AZ user. And now you're going to have get dash MG user. And the whole going from like Azure AD user to AZ user, not a big deal. That was more just a nomenclature and naming. But I remember going from MSOL to Azure AD, and there were a lot of changes there. And there's still, like you said, there's still things that aren't one for one there in terms of like parameters or things you can update or properties you can adjust in terms of going like from MSOL to Azure AD. So I can only imagine what this is going to be like going to MG instead.
I think just one thing to keep in mind, like there's the, do you have to go update these kind of view of the world versus the, what should you think about doing today and moving forward, right? So today and moving forward based on this announcement, if you're going to sit down and write like a net new script, or you're going to go make like major updates to existing ones, like, yeah, you'll probably want to think about getting over to the Graph PowerShell SDK stuff that's out there today. Your old stuff isn't going to just stop working, right? Like the endpoints are still available. They're still alive. What's going to change is they're not going to be supported. So you're not going to, like your mileage is going to vary greatly with going out to something like maybe like the tech community or the answers forums, things like that, and getting help. You're certainly potentially going to have more of a tough time getting any kind of support, like official support from Microsoft, if you have a support contract that maybe gives you like rapid response or things like that. I think like that's probably the biggest consideration is like, do you have a handle on what exists today? Like what's the corpus of scripts that are out there? And, you know, can you come up with a plan to kind of roadmap yourself out based on some of the timelines that Microsoft has provided?
Can I just say, as an IT pro, that seeing Microsoft Graph PowerShell and then having SDK at the end of it just makes me tremor, because all I think is standard development kit. And I'm like, SDKs are for developers. And I just want it to be like Microsoft Graph PowerShell. Like, just drop the SDK, because it just, oh, I'm an IT pro. I don't like SDKs.
Yeah.
Just scares me.
You should also think about like, well, APIs and SDKs often have versions,
yep,
right? And the graph is no different there. So there are multiple versions of the graph REST API, which correspond to different functionality within the graph. So like within your scripts, you might actually want to switch between like API versions as you're doing things. So by default, the PowerShell module uses the REST API version 1, or you can do things like select a different profile and swap over to like beta or anything else along the way.
So I see a potential money-making opportunity here for somebody that likes to learn PowerShell and wants to go create a job of helping everybody convert their PowerShell scripts.
You know, like somebody could make some good money just helping like Tony Redmond convert all his scripts that he's got out there for his Office 365 IT Pro books and things like that.
All of that is going to become invalid. Oh man. Do you feel overwhelmed by trying to manage your Office 365 environment? Are you facing unexpected issues that disrupt your company's productivity? IntelliJink is here to help. Much like you take your car to the mechanic that has specialized knowledge on how to best keep your car running, IntelliJink helps you with your Microsoft Cloud environment, because that's their expertise. IntelliJink keeps up with the latest updates in the Microsoft Cloud to help keep your business running smoothly and ahead of the curve. Whether you are a small organization with just a few users up to an organization of several thousand employees, they want to partner with you to implement and administer your Microsoft Cloud technology. Visit them at intellijink.com/podcast. That's intellijink.com/podcast for more information or to schedule a 30-minute call to get started with them today. Remember, IntelliJink focuses on the Microsoft Cloud so you can focus on your business.
Okay. Before I start crying.
If you're not familiar with the graph, like it's been around long enough that hopefully everybody's heard of it. But if you're not familiar with the graph and you're thinking like, okay, I'm just going to go get hands-on with this PowerShell module, I would actually take it as an opportunity to potentially learn a little bit about the underlying REST API that drives this PowerShell module. So go get and play around maybe with tools like the Graph Explorer.
Yep.
Just to get started with that and start to think about like the way just all the JSONs presented back. Like, are you going to start to want to see things in like the raw JSON format and process them from there, things like that. Like, you'll have different like options available to you. So I think like that part of it, like you said, like not everybody wants to be a developer, but you know, the reality is that understanding like the underlying APIs that drive these surfaces that sit in front of them, like these management surfaces, like it does become important.
Yeah. And then even longer term, just to throw more on top of this, they're also exploring how to align the Graph PowerShell SDK with the Azure PowerShell module. So this is like Azure PowerShell as a whole. Like, I'm guessing that's like AZ, that module, aligning that with the graph and the CLI. Like, this sounds like I don't know. I'm curious to keep an eye on this. Like, are they saying they're going to take everything in Azure and now you're just going to have Microsoft Graph that's going to be all things Azure and Microsoft 365?
I don't read it that way. So like, if you think about like maybe comparing to the way the Azure SDKs have gone over time. Yep. So if I think about like the Azure SDK, the way it exists today, like think about like the .NET SDK. Like today it's on V12, you had V11 before that, V10, V9, all those things. Previous versions, like up to V11, they didn't always follow the semantics of the REST API. So sometimes you would be doing something in the SDK and you would want it to perform differently, but it was hard to go and figure out like how that actually worked on the REST API side. Like if you did have to break out of the SDK and potentially do something through like the raw REST API. So there's been this effort to realign the SDKs to the point where they kind of semantically match and follow along with the constructs and organization that exist within the REST APIs. And that should make it easier for you to bridge the gap between documentation in an SDK all the way through to ultimately like the thing that SDK is doing for you, right? Which was just being a nice wrapper around the REST API. So I see a lot of this as potentially that same kind of effort. Like, hey, there's been a ton of backend functionality that's been driving this stuff for IT pros for a long time that you may or may not have known existed. And if you did know it existed, like it was hard to break out and say like, okay, now I just need to go use the raw REST API in combination with this other tool that sits there. Or if you didn't know it existed, sometimes it's like a dark arts and a science, right? To figure out what's going on. So that's not going to be the case anymore. Now you're going to have this kind of semantic mapping between something like creating a user with the PowerShell SDK, Microsoft Graph PowerShell SDK module, and then being able to map that directly from an underlying like SDK that drives it into the REST API itself. I think like that's beneficial, right? Like we talked earlier about like maybe like Logic App connectors and things like that. There's times like where you don't have a connector available to you and you just need to do things through a RESTful interface. Like, so I think having that underlying knowledge about the REST API itself or how those APIs work in general, like that's not a bad thing. Like I would look at that as an opportunity to learn and grow a little bit.
Got it. So you're not reading this as they're going to bundle everything together, but more create more of a uniform or a consistency across all of those different modules and experiences.
And you've seen that over time. So it's not just like the Azure SDKs, like specifically for like Azure PowerShell. I remember throwing up my arms and like stomping my feet and throwing a hissy fit when a lot of the Azure PowerShell modules started to return raw JSON by default. Like it was just annoying. It was an extra step. It was an extra thing that you had to go and do.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, like understanding like the way that stuff just came back from an API and then how to format JSON into tables or like however you needed it, like that was all fine and easy and doable. And it ended up being like more flexible, right? Like once you learn something like maybe like querying JSON with James Path, like that's just a skill that you can carry forward with you into all these other things that you do.
Got it. That makes sense. I can, when you frame it that way, I think you're probably right in that it's just that alignment across all of them. I would agree with you there.
I think it's a tough thing, right? That would be my take on it.
Yep.
But I don't know that you would get any type of consistent messaging out there like that because there's just so many kind of hands in the cookie jar.
Well, there's so many different teams working on this.
That are making all that happen.
Right?
Yeah.
So like one team writes it one way and another team writes it another way, which is why you do end up with all these different modules and slightly different formats and all of that.
I think if the edict is make sure that your SDKs align to the underlying REST APIs, ultimately that means that any tooling that sits on top of the SDKs, whether it was like the CLI, like it's in like an NPM module, it's a, you know, it's a PowerShell module, all those things, like they're going to have to start to semantically align too. And like it sucks up front, but it makes it easier at the end of the day.
Yeah.
That's the reality of it.
I agree. Like if all that stuff always returned the same way and looked the same way, it would definitely make it easier and make it easier to move between the two of them and write scripts for everything. So I would tend to agree with you on that. And with that, it is 2 minutes to four.
It's time for the next meeting.
It's time for the next meeting. And I am glad those that have joined us in the Discord chat are starting to feel better with all of this.
I'll get around. Someday, like conferences might be a thing again, and we can all just go, like, you know, sit down at a bar or a cafe or something and cry one out over
it. You know what? They are starting to go around. I'm going to be at one next week. You just aren't going to any conferences recently.
No, I'm not.
They're starting to make their way back in. But we did it. We doubled our Discord listenership today, Scott, for the live show. We went from 1 to 2. Doubling it sounded way better than just adding one. But if people do want to go in and listen and interact, so we have had some side conversations as we've been talking and posted some links and various things in Discord as we have gone today. If you would care to join us, go find the recent newsletter and there is a link in there to join Discord. Or if you are not on the newsletter, that frankly is just every week we email out all the show notes with all the links and everything we talked about, go sign up for it. Get the link to join us in Discord. Go sign up. If you don't ever want to see the newsletter again, unsubscribe. It doesn't hurt our feelings. It was just kind of the easiest way not to get a whole bunch of rogue bots, spammers, all of that in our Discord channel for now. So go do that. Join us for the live show. Talk to us during the show. Talk to us between shows. And with that, I think everybody go enjoy their weekend. Unless you have anything else, Scott.
No, that's all I got.
All right. Sounds good. Enjoy your weekend and we will talk to you next week.
Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.